ತಪಾಮ್ಯಹಂ ವರ್ಷಂ ನಿಗೃಹಾಮಿ ಸ್ತುಜಾಮಿ ಚ ಅಮೃತಂ ಚೈವ ಮೃತ್ಯುಶ್ಚ ಸದಹಂ ಚಾಹಂ ಅರ್ಜುನ. ಓ ಅರ್ಜುನ, ಐ ಗಿವ್ ಹೀಟ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಐ ವಿಥ್ ಹೋಲ್ಡ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಸೆಂಡ್ ಫಾರ್ತ್ ದ ರೇನ್. ಐ ಎಮ್ ಇಮ್ಮಾರ್ಟಾಲಿಟಿ ಅಂಡ್ ಐ ಆಮ್ ಆಲ್ಸೋ ಡೆತ್ ಪರ್ಸೋನಿಫೈಡ್. ಬೋತ್ ಸ್ಪಿರಿಟ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಮ್ಯಾಟರ್ ಆರ್ ಇನ್ ಮೀ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ. ಸೊ ಟುಡೇ ವಿ ಆರ್ ರೀಡಿಂಗ್ ದಿಸ್ ನೈಸ್ ವರ್ಸ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ಭಗವದ್ಗೀತಾ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ 9 ಟೆಕ್ಸ್ಟ್ 19, ವೇರಿಂಗ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಸೇಸ್ ವೆರಿ ನೈಸ್ ಗ್ಲಿಂಪ್ಸಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಹಿಸ್ ಎನರ್ಜಿ, ವೆರಿ ನೈಸ್ ಎಕ್ಸಾಂಪಲ್ಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಹೌ ವಿ ಕ್ಯಾನ್ ಅಂಡರ್ಸ್ಟ್ಯಾಂಡ್ ಹಿಸ್ ಎನರ್ಜಿ. ಇನ್ ದ ಬಿಗಿನಿಂಗ್ ಆಫ್ ದಿಸ್ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ ಹಿ ಮೆನ್ಷನ್ಸ್ ದಟ್ ಇನ್ ಮೈ ಅನ್ಮ್ಯಾನಿಫೆಸ್ಟೆಡ್ ಫಾರ್ಮ್ ಐ ಪರ್ವೇಡ್ ದಿಸ್ ಎಂಟೈರ್ ಯೂನಿವರ್ಸ್. And later on he says, Maya Dakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam, that this material energy is actually working under my direction. And this similar point is also mentioned in Brahma Samhita, Srishti Siti Pralaya Sadhana Sakti Reka Chayeva Yasya Bhuvanani Vivarti Durga. So this point that this material energy is working under the direction of Krishna has been mentioned many times. And what is this material energy? This material energy is represented by Bhumi, Rapo, Nalo, Vayu, earth, water, fire, air, ether. So these elements or these represent material energy. So now Krishna is trying to explain or is trying to show glimpses or what we can see and show that actually all these are my energy, my glimpses of my energy. So in this verse he mentions that I give heat and I send forth the rain. So by looking at nature in itself, we can see that the sun, by the workings of the sun comes, it takes up water from the river, from the sea, from all the puddles here and there, and it brings it up to the sky, forms clouds, and it sends forth as rain. So like this, we see that this working of the sun is so nicely, is so nice. And in fact, if you look at it even further, that sun, just by taking water, it takes water, it does not differentiate, oh, this water is very nice, this water is from some rubbish bin, I don't want to take. No, it takes from everywhere, and at the same time, it filters, and it brings down as rain for us. And by water, we also need water for our sustenance. So like this, sun is giving us nice rain. And sun is also giving us nice heat. Actually, if you look at the position of Earth, we find that we are like millions of miles away from the sun. We are millions of miles away. And yet the sun, when we see high up in the sky during the daytime, it is very, very bright. As if millions of spotlights are shining upon us. And then we see that actually when you see, go to the National Stadium or something, we have hundreds of spotlights shining. In the stadium it is so very bright and nice, but actually if you walk 2-3 miles away, all we see is some bright spark, like a star. And we are just 2 miles away. But the sun, millions of miles away, it is giving us such bright light and such nice heat. And it is making us very, very comfortable and is sustaining us in that sense. And the sun also, by nourishing the plants also need sunlight to make food. And when the plants are very nicely nourished, we can take those plants, make nice preparations, and in that way we will get nourished. So the sun in itself, just by study of the sun, we find that this working of this nature is so, so brilliant. And even at night, like now, there's no sun. But still we are feeling very comfortable and nice, no? Not cold or anything, no? But why is that so? That is because the mother nature or nature in itself is also very brilliant. There is a layer of ozone layer. There is this ozone layer which actually traps the heat inside during night time. And in that sense we are also feeling very nice and comfortable. So when we look at all this, we realize that this working or this nature that we see is so brilliantly constructed that one can only but admire this. Then, frankly, when we look at this, instead of looking at the details of this study, or details of how the water cycle goes, how the rain cycle comes, or details of how the sun goes around, instead of studying that, one of the most intelligent questions that then we can ask is, who is the brains behind all this? Why is the sun going up, rising in the morning very nicely, setting in the evening very nicely, and it is not like sun is taking MC tomorrow or something like that. Sun will come tomorrow morning on the dot at about 6-7 o'clock, and it will set on the dot at 6-7 o'clock. There is no respite in this. The sun will come, the sun will set, the sun will sustain the entire world in this way. Who is the brain? Why? How come this nature is working so perfectly? Who is the brain? That is the intelligent question that we must ask. There's this story, I've also mentioned this before, about Newton and his friend. This Newton had this nice friend who was not exactly believing, or he was not exactly understanding the point that this universe, the construction of this universe, must have a brain behind it. So Newton was trying to convince him, but this friend was not so much convinced. So Newton, okay, let it be. So one fine day, he invited the friend over for some tea. So the British, they like to go for tea, you know, afternoon tea. So he invited this friend over for tea. So when the friend came over, and he was waiting for tea, he was walking around the living room, and he saw a model. He saw a model of the entire universe, the planetary system. He saw the Earth, he saw the Jupiter with the red spot, he saw Saturn with the ring, he saw Pluto at the end. He saw everything very nicely constructed, and all in minute detail, the distance, the ratio, everything very nicely done. And then the friend looked at it and said, who made this, Newton? Who made this? Newton said, no, nobody made it. He just was saying, come on, cannot be. Someone must have made it. Who made it? Don't pull my leg. No, I'm serious. Nobody made this. No, I just had these balls and everything. I put it on the board. I left it there. So just then one morning I came up, everything was there nicely. Nah, you are joking with me. But the point is that even for a simple model of the universe, we find that actually we realize we need a creator to make all these balls sit together in that planetary system model. What to speak about this planetary system, this universe in itself? It must require someone to construct, someone to organize, and someone to direct this entire thing. There must be someone. And this is the correct question that we can ask. And when we study, or when we look at this material energy, when we study this material energy, we can study so many things, no? Prabhupada was once having a discussion with this person, and this person was saying, this is very nice, no? We study so much nice things in school. You see this grass here? We can study this grass, we can see why the grass is green, we can see the atomic structure of the grass, and in that way we understand a lot about the grass. Then Prabhupada asked, then what is the point of this knowledge? What is the point? You mean to say that if we don't know how the grass grows, the grass will never grow? The grass will grow still the same. The sun will shine, the water will be produced, and the grass will nicely be growing very nicely, with or without our knowledge. So the question comes, how is this mechanism, and who is the brain behind this mechanism? That should be our question. And when we understand that part of the question, and when we understand how the grass is in relation to that, then our knowledge is perfect. If not, our knowledge is just in silo or imperfect. It's only one aspect or one portion which is not connected to the whole, or which is not in correct perspective. Now the problem is, when we start to ask who the brain is, we ourselves are riddled by four defects. We have four defects. We have this tendency to commit mistakes. This second defect, we are also illusion. We are subjected to illusion. And this famous example is given. Sometimes we see a rope on the floor, we may think it's a snake, and we start jumping up and down, running away. Such a havoc, such a ruckus, and then we find that actually it's just one rope down there. So we ourselves, our understanding, we will think, our intelligence becomes covered, and we think that rope is actually snake, and we will run away. Third problem is we have this propensity to cheat. We have this propensity to cheat. The best example or understanding we can have is when we go to some shop or some sales or something, then the salesman will say, no, oh, this thing is a fantastic thing, no, it can do this, it can do that, it does fantastic. And you will think, actually it is true, look at this, it is almost as valuable as a diamond. This is like diamond, no? And I'm getting it so cheap. I must be the most intelligent. I'm good. This salesperson, I don't know what's wrong with him. He can sell. And then you think you are best. You take the thing and you buy the thing and you use it at home and you will fall apart. And you wonder, this is actually cheated. I'm actually being cheated. So the point is, when we are being sold something, of course, businessmen, they will actually gloss all the good qualities, but the bad qualities they will not say, you know. And our intelligence, what is the first defect? Commit mistake, right? Our intelligence is actually covered. We do not have that intelligence to ask the correct question to find out the mistake. So we will make the mistake and buy the thing, and then we realize in the hard way that actually this is not what I want. And the fourth defect is our senses are imperfect. Our senses, like for example, I cannot see what is beyond this corner. I cannot see. I cannot see 2-3 miles away. And in fact, very simply, if you switch off all these lights, you and I cannot see each other. So that our senses in itself are imperfect. So with this, all these four defects, when we start to question who the brain behind this material nature is, our understanding or our conclusion might not be perfect. And that is the point. When our understanding might not be perfect, we have three different types of, in broad categories, we'll have three different types of people with three different types of conclusions being derived. One is the kind of people who think that ultimately everything is nature in itself. Nature in itself is the greatest. And the best example we'll see is like tribal people, no? Tribal people, when they have tribes, they will have different tribes. In each tribe will have a different deity. Or one tribe will be called the tiger tribe. Another tribe will be called the bear tribe. Another tribe will be called the eagle tribe. And each of these tribes, the deity will be the bear. They will have one figure of the bear. Another one will have one figure of the tiger. And how come this deity, the story of this or the history of this deity comes about? Because these tribal people are generally hunters. They are generally hunters. So they will go with their spears and their bows and arrows and their blowpipe and everything. They will go out to the jungle to hunt. And all they are looking is some rabbit or some deer or some simple animal like this to kill and come back. But when they encounter one tiger, one big huge tiger, what they will do? I think I better run away. So they will try running away, and if you cannot, that's it. One tiger jump on you, and tigers are very strong, very fast and very strong. One jump on you and they will just break your neck and that's it, you are gone. So when the hunters, they see this supreme power, this great power of this tiger, they feel that this tiger is the greatest. This tiger is the greatest. And therefore, they will start worshipping the tiger. But the underlying principle is that we, in ourselves, we have this tendency to serve. We have this tendency to want to serve some supreme power. We recognize that we are some infinitesimal, small little spark, and this great spark or great power is there to whom we must submit to. That feeling or that feeling is there, or that want is there. However, we are not in the correct mentality, or we with these four defects we come to wrong conclusion. Like these tribal people, they see a tiger, they see the supreme power of the tiger. They worship the tiger. Likewise, another person may see the sun. Sun is the greatest. Likewise, you may see some mountain. Mountain is the greatest. Some bear is the greatest. So like this, we may worship different aspects of the power that we see in this material nature. And we worship them as greatest. That is one category of people. Another category of people is those who worship personalities. Or personalities like great personalities, like for example businessmen, they may think or they may see or look upon someone like Bill Gates, such a fantastic person, such a fantastic brilliant business mind, because he has developed this nice software and he has conquered the entire computing world. Now we are stuck with Windows and all the Microsoft products. But he is brilliant. Now, and for us, or small time business, or we are trying to aspire to be businessmen, we look upon him and we say, ah, this is a great person. And in the guise of mentorship, we try and glorify him, we try and almost worship him. So that is another kind of group of people who try and worship such great personalities. Such personalities who have exhibited some certain level of fame, certain level of intelligence, certain level of business intelligence, and so on and so forth. But the third kind of person are those who actually realize that actually I am not this body. I am actually the spirit soul, and I am supposed to connect myself with the supreme soul. These are the third kind of person, third category of person. And it is the third category of person who are considered the best among the three, because he has actually understood Atma Tattva, or the knowledge of the self. So when we realize that this understanding, that when we are the soul and we are supposed to connect to the super soul, and who is this super soul, that we should also try to understand. And we look, actually when we look at nature or look at our life here, we find that we have also no control over all this material energy. We have no control. No matter how much we understand about this material nature, or we understand who the whole working is like, we also have no control. Like for example, we may be thinking, or we may plan to go to the beach for a nice picnic and enjoy ourselves. We may go there, set up the picnic mat, sit down there very nicely, but the thunder may come, the lightning may come, and one nice thunderstorm will come and spoil our plans. We may have, by our intelligence, we may make some umbrella or something and we hold, but that is actually but a small trying to fight against nature, or it's just a temporary respite to run away and go to some shelter. But ultimately, real control means, if the rain is coming, we look at the rain, stop rain, don't come. That is the real control. That real control we also don't have. And we also don't have, we are here in this material world with four miseries. Actually we are here with four miseries. Birth. Birth in itself, we look at Bhagavadam, or we look at how birth is there. This baby is sitting in the womb, and it's actually after the seventh month, the baby actually starts to cry. That I've taken birth. I have not learned my lesson when I have taken birth. Krishna, please, at least in this life, at least let me come out. At least let me come out of this material world. So birth in itself is painful. Disease, nobody wants to get disease. Nobody. What to talk of big disease, heart attack or cancer or something. Just some simple flu or fever, already we got problem. We'll sit in the bed and nose all pain la, here all pain la. Such uncomfortable position. Nobody wants to get disease. But yet it comes. Same thing, death. Nobody wants to die. Nobody in the same mind will say, I want to die. No. Death will come, and it does not come announced, or it does not come, okay, your appointment for death is this date, at this time, at this place. Be ready for it. No, death does not come like that. It will come when it comes. And we have no choice but to go. So, in itself, we have no control over all this. We have no control. And when we look, that great personalities, in the Bhagavadam, we see that this great personality of this great demon called Hiranyakashipu, he had some control. He can actually see the rain, rain god, you better stop, and the rain will run away. Sun, you better come, the sun will come. He had that kind of control. By his powers and potencies, he had that kind of control. And in fact, he wanted to become immortal. He went and asked Lord Brahma, Lord Brahma, please make me immortal. I don't want to die. Lord Brahma said, no, sorry, I cannot do that. No. Okay, I think you don't understand what's the meaning of immortality. Let me spell it out to you. I should not die by a man or an animal. I should not die in the land or the air. So like this, he made some conditions, and then he was almost like immortal. But what happened? Narsingadev came or Krishna came as Narasimhadev and immediately killed him. Very easily killed him. Just like what's the bhajan we always say? Just like a wasp is being crushed between one's fingernails, Narasimhadev killed Hiranyakashipu. That is our position. Although we may aspire and try to control this material nature, although we may aspire and try to control or to make ourselves very comfortable within these four miseries that we are having, we will still succumb to death, birth, old age and disease. We will still succumb to this. There is no respite, no way out of this. So frankly, based on our defective mind, our defective senses and all this, we frankly see that actually by analyzing or logically analyzing or studying this place, actually it is not a very very intelligent way of understanding all this. The best way to understand all this is actually to go back to Shastra. Actually to go back to that which is perfect. That which is not, which is transcendental to the four defects. That which is above this form is four miseries of life. That which is above this material nature, that we should look. And what is that? That is the transcendental Vedas. Why we Vedas are considered transcendental? Because it is spoken by or spoken about the Supreme Lord. And if we talk about the Supreme Lord is Satchit Ananda Vigraha. He is eternal, blissful and full of knowledge. He is above this material nature. He is not succumbed by these fourfold miseries, his four defects or whatever. He is not. And because he is not, because just like a ship captain, when a captain of the ship, he is in the ship, he is safe. He is above the water. He is not struggling in the water. So when he sees the man in the water, what he does? The captain of the ship can come and pick up the man. And the captain of the ship can say, hey, you come this way, take the float. The man in the water, if he is really intelligent, he will see, yes, that person is free from my struggling position. I should actually listen to what he is saying. And he will hold on to the float, he will climb the whatever ladder or rope or something, and he will come and become safe. So just like similarly, because Krishna is transcendental, because Krishna is above this material nature, because Krishna is transcendental to these sufferings that we are undergoing, these defects that we have, therefore whatever is spoken by him or whatever is spoken about him will also be transcendental. And when the Vedas say that Krishna is the Supreme Person and this is the method to understand him, we should just follow. And that would be the most simplest and the most intelligent and the best way to understand Krishna. And the best way in this age, this Kali Yuga, the best way to understand Krishna is given as this chanting of this Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Very simple process. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama Eva Kevala, Klau Nasteva, Nasteva, Nasteva Gadananyata. And why is this chanting so powerful? That is also explained by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Sishtashtaka, first verse. That frankly chanting in itself burns all our anarthas, all our karmas, all our bad things that we have done for millions or millions of years. We have been doing so much things, and that is why we are struggling in this material world. We are entangled in this material world, and this chanting actually removes all these anarthas, all this karma is being removed. That is the first quality of chanting. Second quality is, not only does it remove the anarthas or this karma, it also removes that desire to enjoy on our own, to enjoy our senses. And we understand when karma is formed when we try and do activities for our own sense pleasure. When we do activities for our own sense pleasure, there is karma. Whether it is good or bad, there is still karma. So when we chant, this desire to act on our own behalf, we get reduced and gets removed. And the third quality that is that chanting can give is the fact that it gives us real knowledge. And what is real knowledge? Knowledge means the knowledge of the soul, knowledge of the Supreme Soul, and how we are related to him, how to act for him, how to serve him. That is real knowledge. And that knowledge will come to us through the agency of Sadhu, Shastra and Guru. And finally, chanting in itself gives us Krishna Prema. or love of Krishna. So with these four qualities or with these four benefits of chanting, all we have to do is just to chant. Very simply just chant. We have chanted very nicely just before this, and we find just by practical example, when we are chanting, we feel very blissful. Or if we had many problems or many distress, anxiety or whatever, we find that once we step into this hall, Virama Kaliaman temple hall, we find that all these problems or anxieties somehow or other disappear. And we feel naturally deep in our heart, we felt blissful. We have felt at peace. And this blissfulness is there because our soul in itself is also spiritual in nature. When our soul is actually spiritual and we are actually qualitatively the same, we are qualitatively blissful as Krishna, this conditioning or this feeling is reawakened when we start chanting. And when we start chanting, this condition of being blissful is reawakened and we automatically feel happy. We automatically feel happy. So chanting can be done very nicely by chanting by japa. We can do one round, two rounds, or like this we can do early in the morning. We can sit in front of the altar and we can do some chanting. Chanting one round 108 times does not take much effort. It's about 10 minutes or 15 minutes of our time. And when we chant early in the morning before we go to work, we find that day somehow or other become extra special, or we find ourselves extra tolerant, extra happy. We are not so much disturbed by many of the material onslaughts. Our boss may shout at us, our colleagues may do something nasty to us, but we are not too much bothered or very much agitated by all this. That is something that is experienced by practice. We find that this happens. And sometimes some devotees may also experience that when we chant, automatically others will also see, hey, I see something different about you. You look somewhat happier. Why? But we know why. Because we are connected to Krishna who is supremely happy. We are chanting very nicely. And because we are chanting very nicely, automatically that happiness, that blissfulness also shows in our face. We can also chant very nicely like how we chanted just now. We can sing with karta, with mridanga, we can sing very nicely. That way we all can also chant. And in that way we can also remember Krishna. So like this we get connected to Krishna in this way. So this understanding of Krishna through the agency or through the study of this material universe, material energy, the splendor of the sun and the moon, yes, it is very nice. It is very nice. We look at this, we see the energy, we see these glimpses of this energy and we can understand and appreciate. But this kind of appreciation or this kind of understanding of seeing the Lord in this form, it is not so much hankered after by devotees. It is not so much. If you look at Bhagavad Gita later on in chapter 11, when Arjuna is being shown the universal form by Krishna, Krishna will show the universal form. Everything is there. The entire material energy is there. Wind, sun, moon, everything. And also the passage of time, he can see all the warriors of the Kurukshetra battlefield are all being devoured, all being killed. He can see that. And he can see the magnificent splendor. He can see the energy of Krishna being displayed to him. But was Arjuna satisfied? Arjuna, yes, this is very nice. But I would like to see that two-handed form of yours. I would like to see that two-handed Shyamasundara form of yours. That gives me pleasure. And when Krishna showed him that two-handed form, immediately Arjuna felt very blissful, very happy. And that is the point, that although we see this aspect of Krishna, this material energy as one aspect of Krishna, we can see the splendor. However, this splendor is something that is nice, yes, it builds our faith for Krishna, but it is not so much hankered, it is not so much desired for by Krishna, by the devotees. In fact, even if you look at Srimad Bhagavatam, we find that the study or the working of the universe is very elaborately explained. But you find that in that whole entire discussion, Parikshit Maharaj does not ask many questions. Parikshit Maharaj does not. Yukadeva just says, and there was no questions, many questions. And also Prabhupada does not write many purport. purport also very little. There's one or two purport, and in fact one of the purports Prabhupada mentioned, this entire chapter is for those who are interested, those scientific minded people who are interested in all this. And he mentions very, very simply like this, and he lets the chapter run in that way. So we find that actually this kind of understanding is not so much desired. What is desired? When we hear the Leela, the Vraja Leela, when we hear Krishna, how he played with the Gopas, how Lord Brahma stole the cows, how Krishna actually expanded himself, how Krishna actually played with Mother Yashoda, how Krishna actually was tied up by the grinding mortar. Like this, when we hear the pastimes of Vrindavan, Krishna's dealing with the devotees, that gives us pleasure. And that is the kind of splendor, or that is the kind of qualities that we should be hearing. And that kind of pastime, and that kind of narrations where Krishna exhibited his potencies, that kind of narration gives us even more pleasure. When we read the Bhagavatam, when we read Mahabharata, or when we read Ramayana, when we see Lord Ram, yes, there is Lanka, let us go forth and wage a war with Ravana. And when we see how Lord Ram dealt with many devotees, like when we dealt with Sugriva, when he dealt with Hanuman, or when we dealt with Vibhishana, when Vibhishana came over, defected over, and he came and surrendered to Lord Ram, Lord Ram said, yes, please come, I accept you. Although the entire the monkey army was not so much keen, all the great generals, Sugriva and all that, they were thinking, no, 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 something is wrong. This fellow is enemy, no. He is coming from that side, no. No, no, no. Lord Ram very nicely said, he has sincerely surrendered to me and therefore I accept him wholeheartedly. And that is the Krishna that we want to know. The all-forgiving Krishna. We may have done many, many things in the past. We may have been such a useless fellow in the past. But Krishna does not want to know that, or Krishna does not really see that. He sees that at this point, how much sincere are you? How much surrendered are you? The moment he sees that surrender in you, this is the person I would like to save. Or this is the person I shall give my blessing and my mercy to. Krishna sees that. And that is what we want to hear. When we hear Vraja Leela, when we hear dealings of Krishna with various devotees, how he dealt with Mother Yashoda as a child, how he dealt with Arjuna as a friend, how he dealt with gopis as a lover, how he dealt with Rukmini Mata as a husband, these kind of different variegated relationships he had with the various devotees, we want to hear that. And when we hear that, that gives us even more pleasure, that gives us even more Krishna conscious thinking. That is what we want. And finally, this kind of this entire Krishna conscious process is actually based on activity. And Prabhupada, many times in the purport, he always writes devotional service. Devotional service. He does not say devotion, this is a part of devotion. No. He says this is a part of devotional service. And that is also very, very important point to understand, that our entire process is a process of activity. It's positive activity. We are not here, we know, yes, we are acting. When we act on our own accord, when we act for our own senses, yes, we create all this karma, all this bondage, entanglement, and therefore, we should stop acting. That is one kind of that is one kind of process. We stop acting. This negation of activity is there, but we find that it is not very sustainable because our condition, our soul, the very constitutional position is that we have to act. We have to act. We have to act in a way to serve someone. That is our constitution position. So when we say we negate activity and we sit down there and do nothing, or we stop our mind from thinking of anything else except Krishna, we find that this process is not very easy to do. It is not sustainable. We can sit down for maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 1 hour, but after that we find that this thing cannot last. We find our mind will go very far here, there, everywhere except Krishna. Now after a while we'll think, let me just go there and take a nice cup of 100 plus or something. Our mind will think. Our mind will go everywhere else to do something. So therefore, this process is to actually churn or channel the energy to act. Channel the energy of action to Krishna. To act for Krishna. And that is why this devotional service is very, very practical. We find that, we want to please Krishna. Oh, Krishna is there. Oh, can we make some nice garlands for him and garland him? oh, we are singing very nicely. Yes, we can play some karta, we can play mridanga, we can sing for the Lord, we can sweep the floor after program, we can serve prasadam, we can serve prasadam, we can take prasadam, we can clean the floor. Like this, there are so many services that we can do for Krishna. And when we do all these for Krishna, we find that automatically that the consciousness will also become Krishna consciousness. We find. And that is the meaning of spiritualizing this material energy. We find that all this material energy, earth, water, fire, air, ether, all these are there, and all these are being used in our sense pleasure. But when we utilize all these in Krishna's service, then all these will become spiritualized. All these will become spiritualized. And when this, and the example is given, it's just like iron rod. Iron rod in itself is just iron. But when we put inside the fire and it becomes red hot, iron rod actually becomes fire. It actually is fire. It can burn things, it can do everything. But the moment you take the iron rod out of the fire, what happens? It becomes iron again. So in the same way, when our actions become Krishna conscious, or we act for Krishna, or we do Krishna conscious activities, we find that our life, or our activities, or our entire arena of activities become spiritualized. And in that sense, we find that we are not disturbed by any of these material onslaughts, we are not affected by these four miseries, we are not affected by this defect that we have, because we are constantly in touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is all blissful, all knowledge, and all, and is eternal. So this verse gives us some glimpse in itself. It gives us some glimpse to show us, to give us some idea of the splendor of the splendor of Krishna. How Krishna exhibits himself by giving us some practical examples of what we can see in this material nature. And we can see that by understanding this workings of this nature is not so good enough. But when we understand the brains, or who is the brain behind this nature, then our question or process of questioning becomes more intelligent. And when we come to the conclusion through proper study of the Vedas, through proper inquiry to the correct proper inquiry, we find that we become Krishna consciousness. And when we become Krishna consciousness, we find that we are constantly in touch with Krishna, and we are constantly becoming very blissful, very peaceful, and eternally happy. Is there any questions? Sorry, Guru, is there some question?
I have one comment.
Thank you very much for a nice class, Guru. Especially the concept of seeing Krishna through various energies. So I have just something to add, because I was reading Mahabharata, and in Mahabharata Vidur, he was explaining Dhritarashtra about the futility of this material world, and he was trying to make him detach from his attachment towards his children, his attachment towards the kingdom, his attachment towards the throne on which he was sitting. So he was telling one story, that once upon a time there was an old man, and he found himself, he found himself that he is in the forest. Suddenly he felt that he is in the forest, and there are so many animals in the forest, various kinds of animals, and he is hearing different types of sounds of the animals, and he was getting really scared and worried for his own life. So, to save his life, he started running. The further he went, suddenly he saw there was an old lady. And that old lady was telling that, wait. But this man was looking at her, but he was not stopping. So old lady was running behind him. So then suddenly, because of so much of jungle was there, he just fell into a ditch, a type of, in a well. So he fell into the well and he could not reach the bottom because there were many veins inside that well. Many veins. So he just got stuck in that. And he got stuck and then he saw below the bottom of that well that there was a snake, a very, very big snake. And he was just waiting that when this fellow will fell down and I will bite him. Then he saw on the top, so there was one elephant. And that elephant had 6 heads. And that elephant had 12 feet. And this elephant was just waiting. And then he saw there was, because he fell from, after he was running and then he just fell into the ditch, there was some movement on those trees and on those veins. So there was one honeybee. The place of honeybees. So because of their residence, it was disturbed. So all the honeybees, they started flying. Huh? And because of that movement, the honey started falling. It was dropping. So, and he was just looking himself. He was looking on the top, and the honey, it fell on his face, and he tasted that honey, and he felt, wow, this is something really nice. So because he was hanging, he stopped his movement so that he can concentrate on the taste of that honey. So he was not moving, that if I move, the honey may fall below, so let me just taste as much as I can. But suddenly he saw that there were white and black rats who were biting and biting those veins on which he was hanging. So slowly they were biting. So after seeing this, we know that what will be the destination of that person, that although he is engaged in that enjoyment, that one moment the white and black rats, they are going to finish those veins and he will fall into the ditch and obviously the snake will bite. So after seeing this story, Vidura explained that the whole jungle is like a material world. And all the animals into the forest of which he was fearing of is all the diseases. All the diseases. And the old lady who was saying that wait is a jara, that is old age. Whatever we do, old age is definitely going to come. And all those veins, it is all like material facilities which we have created, and on which we are hanging on. And all those white and black rats, they are like day and night. And the snake which is there below is like the time, Kal, is just waiting when this fellow will come. And that elephant who is having 6 heads and 12 feet is the 6 seasons and the 12 months. Now, of course, in Singapore we don't have many seasons, but India we have 6 seasons in the year. So 6 seasons and 12 months. And that the fellow who fell down, that the pit which is in which he fell down is like the material body. So all of us are in the... So when I was reading this story, I really felt it very much inspiring, that all of us are going through the same thing. We are all trying to enjoy this material world, but actually the death is waiting and there are so many instruments to fasten that process. So, just wanted to share this thing to you. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Prabhu, thank you very much for a very nice class. I was just reminded about these points my Guru Maharaj used to say, like what Prabhuji has described. My Guru Maharaj said, remember this bank called HSBC. you know, we those who bank with HSBC is very simple. I think they keep what I said in the last class also before. H means humility, S means service, B means Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, and C means chanting. So if you just do this, you'll be very blissful, like what Shukma Prabhu has said in this class. So HSBC. Thank you, Prabhu.
Any other points? Any other comments? If not, we can stop here. Gandharashrama Bhagavad Gita ki.
Yes.
Anandagauri Vaishnava Vrinda ki.
Yes.
Sai Gaura Premanandi ki.